There she is.
Here she comes.
Jane McCarty.
There's the Duchess.
That's a giant thumb from Jane McCarty.
I know.
We've had Mark Cox do it. We've had Jane McCarty do it. Are we back to Paul Riley introducing us?
I think we should be at Dave Goodall doing it. And also, yeah. I think as Dave, just as Dave trails the show, we should remind everybody that foodopolis.org is available for everybody.
Well, I have to say, you don't have to remind people because Jane McCarty had some peanut butter cookies yesterday.
I had one and crumbs, David. I'll not have you saying some.
Yeah, and you know, she liked them, and the recipe is there on foodopolis.org if anyone wants to go look.
Yes!
Probably the best cookie I've ever had in my life. And I'm not just saying that. He told me he double-baked them. Now, I've double-baked them a few times when I've completely burned them to a crisp, but I don't know how you managed to double-bake them and not burn them.
See, the secret is I double-baked them, right? What you did was you burned them. Those are two technically different terms.
Well, it was absolutely delicious. Harder than usual, but absolutely out of this world.
Well, folks, welcome to 3 across, 1 down, 15 over. Well done. Well, folks. Welcome to 3 down, 1 across, episode 6. It's a long way for a shortcut. Here we go. And remember that later on in the podcast, we'll be joined by the fabulous Gavin Mitchell.
Yay! Yay! He'll no show up.
What have folk been up to? What's this week brought for you?
Because everybody is allowed now to travel, I'm going to go to Ireland.
Yeah, nice.
Ooh, wonderful. And next week, I'll be broadcasting live from somewhere in Ireland.
3 down, 1 across goes global.
What have you been doing, Jane?
The most exciting thing I've done this week is have a hard cookie at David's. He was helping me with my laptop. That's genuinely the best thing about my whole week.
Is that no the most? Jane went to David Goodall's so he could help her with her laptop. What does that even mean? Help her with her laptop? Help you what? Open it.
Let's just say that we had to organise a phone call and I thought it was coming from London. Turned out it was coming from San Francisco. And then when the dame phoned me,
The dame?
The dame phoned me. I know. I said to him, what is this? I said, and then he went, why did you do that? Why did you do that? That's the call we've been waiting on. And I said, but I never get calls from San Francisco. He said, no, this is what he actually said to me. He went, never got a work call from America. I went, no, never in 30 years have I ever had a work call from San Francisco.
We went online. There's a wee questionnaire. And I said, do you want to email them or get a call back? Oh, I'll get a call back, please. I went, right, okay. And then I said to her, what's your mobile number? I put it in. Her phone rings. She hangs up saying it'll be a spam call. And I said, why'd you hang up? She went, I thought they'd phone you.
Help me with my laptop.
Well, this is Ep 6, and it took me to Ep 4 to be able to cope with even doing the Zoom. So, that's come true. On. It's all progress.
Dave, would you mind telling us the main theme of Episode 6 then?
Long Road for a Shortcut, which was a title we've had for at least 30 seconds, I think.
Yep.
It's just about how we're all doing the creative stuff. And everyone has had a roundabout way of getting here or wee jobs in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's like when we spoke to Matt Costello. Everybody's got a past in that regard when he worked on the bridge and stuff like that. So
Harrison Ford was a carpenter. He built the Millennium Falcon as a carpenter. And when he was building it, that's when George Lucas and Steven Spielberg said, we'll give that boy a chance.
No, they didn't know it. Bluff.
Anyway, then I'm thinking that the Millennium Falcon's made of wood. So hold on a minute.
We'd never survive in space.
It's a fire hazard flying. No way.
One wrong laser and the whole thing's up in a puff of smoke.
Exactly. Exactly. No. Jeannie.
Yes, darling.
What did you get up to before you did the acting?
I sold shortbread to ministers. That was odd, over the phone, telesales.
No. Explain that.
You're not getting away with that, Jane. Come on.
It was very, very strange. What you had to do was phone phone up ministers at the manse, and we're always so polite, and say to them, would they like for their guides, for the brownies, the BB, for us to give them shortbread and put the name of whatever that BB would be, like the 117 Kings Park, whatever BB, band round the shortbread, and the boys and girls could take it home and sell it to their families and raise money for the church. That was hard, but I did that for a while, and then because of my experience on that, I got a job on a sex line.
Well, I remember that.
Do you remember that? I got Astrid Wilson on it as well, and it, but it was sexual help. I'm an innocent soul, and I can't really give anybody advice on that. And I used to sit reading magazines, because it would be young boys that would phone up talking about masturbation, and I would give them the best advice that I could. Well, thinking what I was going to have for my dinner. It was the least sexy thing you could ever imagine. And it was sponsored by the NHS.
I remember, because of your slightly uncontrollable desire to laugh, when you did have someone phone up with problems about the potential size of their penis, the snorts of laughter were coming, which isn't the best counselling method.
I wasn't a great counsellor, I remember a boy phoned from the class, and I could hear the teacher teaching the lesson in the background, and I was saying to him, you shouldn't be on your phone, you should be listening to the teacher. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous.
He phoned from the class to talk about his willy?
No, he phoned to the class, because I would say 80% of the calls were hoax calls from young people that just wanted to talk about sex on a free phone number. I mean, who wouldn't at 15?
Free phone.
Yes, it was a free phone number because, as I say, it was sponsored by the NHS. But on a more serious side, probably 20% of the calls were people who did genuinely need help, and you would put them in touch with the right agencies or whatever.
The weirdest thing was, though, about that, you actually sold more shortbread on that phone line than you did with the regular one.
Mark, I ate more shortbread on that line.
See, the shortbread, you said you used to, you engraved it for people.
Not the actual shortbread, it would be on the box.
Oh, right, okay. Because I was going to say, your last comment about baking was how you burned biscuits.
No, I didn't have to cook the shortbread.
Oh, right, okay.
The other job that I do, of course, still, now and again, is teach. So when I was 30, I went back to be a drama teacher in secondary schools, which was good. I actually loved doing that over the years. But then when the first hydro started, and I was teaching in St Andrew's Secondary in Glasgow, and the boys wanted me, as Isa, to be naked and on the side of the city chambers, the full side of the city chambers, as a publicity stunt.
When you say the boys, you don't mean the boys in your class?
No.
That's what it sounded like. You'll hear my scone take your dream off.
No, sorry, Ford and Greg. Do you remember? Tickets sold so fast, they didn't need to do publicity stunts, but I had to go into the head teacher's office and ask in a Catholic school if he would mind if one of his staff members could be naked on the side of the city chambers, if that would be a problem. And I remember he sat and he said nothing for about 20 seconds. He went, I thought I'd heard every question he could possibly be asked. I'd never in my wildest dreams imagined a teacher would ask me that. But I have loved teaching as well. So what about you, boys?
I started off as an apprentice joiner that I couldn't be. It was awful early in the morning in a van, awful cold, 7 a.m. Oof. And then when I went to drama college, I came out, and then unemployment, worked in lots of Glasgow restaurants, Italian ones particularly, and I loved that. And I would always recommend that to young actors to get involved in that. You're allowed to eat what you like. It was tremendous. Oh, I loved it. I worked for Massimo Onorati at Roma Mia, and Massimo was a cavaliere, which was a knight of, what is it, David? A knight of Rome.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. Great fun. And, you know, looking at finding characters, that's where I found them all the time. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I think one of my first jobs, apart from a paper run, was Ashfield Greyhound Stadium. And I did various jobs in there. And the very first one was handing out the programmes to the heavy smokers that came through the turnstile for 50 pence a night, right? That's what I got. And then eventually I worked my way into the kennels, where I would take the names of the dogs for the following meeting. And so what would happen is there would be, on average, maybe 50 greyhounds at any given time going through the kennels, and they would all just lie in the kennels. And then when the bell went, they would day their dinger, every one of them, 50 of them, and they would go mental for about 15 minutes. And then they would get taken out for their next race, and they would all calm down, and then go brrrr, and that happened 10 times a night. So it did drive me crazy. There's no question about it.
Sounds exactly to me like when I would teach in the school and the bell would go and everybody would go. What about you, David Goodall? You've had an interesting and colourful background.
I didn't do lots of things and then go into acting. It all got interspersed. I've been a chef. I was an apprentice electrician.
How did the chefing thing come about, Dave?
The chefing thing came about because my parents didn't understand and my dad was like, so what are you going to do now? Because I'd just finished fifth year. You go to the RAF. I said, well, I thought I'd do sixth year. As a wee pause and he went, what's sixth year? And I went, well, I'll go back to school. But you just stayed on to do your hires. Well, if you stay on, you'll have to get a job.
That's got the whiff of there's money to be made out of you, Dave. Why are you going back to school? We could be making money off you.
So that was that. I basically had to earn money. I would go to school in St Andrews and I would then kind of stay there and play a piano in a restaurant and then ended up doing a bit of waiting, ended up going to the kitchen and ended up getting some decent training. But it came about because my parents had no concept as to why anyone would want to stay on at school.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Can you tell me what a theodolite is, either of you?
A theodolite is a device used by civil engineers for measurement purposes.
Measuring planes and levels. And at the other end of the theodolite is a man with a stick with a mirror on it. He's called a chain boy. And that's what I was in an earlier life as well.
Ah.
Chain boy.
And I used to stare at the man with the theodolite when we were building the Royal Concert Hall, as it's now known. And the Royal Concert Hall, it's alleged now, is sinking.
That makes sense.
It might be due to me. We don't know. Right. We can fact check it, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can see that. See if they've publicised that one. Let's spin the wheel.
Oh, please be Australia.
I think it will be Australia.
It's Motherwell.
Motherwell.
Long time no see. Aye, Motherwell. Well, what do we know about Motherwell?
I'd like to know, before you tell me about Motherwell, are you not doing something?
Oh, Paul Riley, get your dates out.
It's because on the 9th of 2021, April, It's because on the 9th of April 2021, we will be playing the Motherwell Theatre and Stroke Concert Hall with our show still gone.
Yes!
Still gone? Yes.
It's going to be a rare tear, right enough.
Oh, that's fantastic. And were you meant to be there this month?
We were meant to be there at some point this year, but with the current situation, we decided it would be best that nobody fell out and we just moved it all back a wee bit.
Yeah.
I think the Olympics got onto it and everybody, you know, the snooker championships and all that, but we were first.
We were first. Interestingly enough, Wednesday, in fact, that's today, isn't it? Aye. Teatro Real in Madrid is opening La Traviata.
Oh.
Aye. Ooh. Hello. They've done a distanced performance. The cast are in various marked off areas. The orchestra are about 1.5 metres apart. Everyone is wearing masks, apart from wind players, and the audience will have. But that'll be an interesting experiment. That's the world's first major production going back on.
By the way, and on that, everybody, the tour currently finishes on the 26th of April 2021 at the King's Theatre in Glasgow. We would love to go to England, Wales and Ireland. So if you're out there listening, and indeed the world, anywhere that you think we would be accepted, then please get in touch via Twitter or all the usual platforms and we'll see if we can make it work. Happy days. The population of Motherwell is 3, 2, 1, 2, 0. Okay. And that's all I have to say in the matter.
And that's it.
Oh no, okay, and growing.
Right, well, Motherwell, I've got some interesting facts about Motherwell if you wanted to hear them. Famous people from Motherwell.
Uh-huh.
Jim Conacher was born in Motherwell and he became a well-known ice hockey player. Played for the Detroit Red Wings, New York Rangers and Chicago Blackhawks.
Really?
And he died only 2 months ago at 98 years of age. But information regarding the theatre that we played in, very interesting information here, which we probably don't know. It opened in December 1970.
That's right.
And it was opened by Danny DeVito. He was quoted as saying, "I love North Lanarkshire. I love the place. Whether I end up in Airdrie, Bells Hill, or Shotts, I know I'm going to have a blast." Fact
check. The Motherwell Concert Hall and Theatre was officially opened in 1970 by the Right Honourable Lord Clydesmuir, CB, MBE, TD, LLD, Lord Lieutenant of the County of Lanark. It is unlikely this was Danny DeVito.
That'll be why all the locks are loading on that theatre.
Exactly right.
Folks, there's a wee bit of a downside to the Motherwell Concert Hall and Theatre. In so much as it has a ghost.
Oh no! How do you manage this? Yeah.
And this involves the mysterious story of Irene O'Dea. The year is 1972, and Irene is an ice cream seller, and she's at the front of the stage selling ice cream during the Lindisfarne concert. Now, Lindisfarne played there in 1972, and it was their last gig of the tour, and they had an excess of dry ice and smoke.
It's a disaster waiting to happen.
So when they played their epic hit Fog on the Tyne, they engulfed the stage in both smoke and fog. When it cleared, Irene O'Dea had disappeared, leaving nothing but her paper hat, her tray, and two funny feet.
Oh, funny feet.
That's all that was left. Uh-huh. And it's said that to this day, she can be felt during performances. A cold hand would touch someone's shoulder, and the voice would say, "The spoon's under the lid."
Jane, a wee question for you, by the way.
Yes.
We've heard nothing in the past few weeks about Basil.
I didn't want to say that things are quite bleak out there, aren't they? But Basil didn't make it, boys.
No, he didn't make it.
Oh, no.
Basil's as dry as the dried basil she's got in the cupboard.
It's 14 years out of date.
There isn't a moth somewhere.
So what, sorry, boys.
Plasticine cartoon? Oh, morph. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
See, the subject, Long Way for a Shortcut, it got me thinking about kids at 14 at school are asked to pick their subjects, basically having had to decide on the career that they want.
Oh,
How the hell at 14 are you meant to have said, "I know what I want to do for a living"?
That's funny, because I remember picking my subjects and it always involved the ones with the less writing. Mm-hmm. So you would always do something like techie drawing or social and vocational skills.
That was a
brand new thing when I was at school, and it involved no writing whatsoever, and anything that involved no writing, that was good for me.
My brother left school, he did techie drawing and woodwork and whatnot, and he joined RAF and he was a mechanic. When he came out of the RAF, he then got a job in a college teaching mechanics. He then did computing. He had a company that did networks for the police, for the health service, huge things. And now he's a sheep farmer. How can you say to a 14-year-old, what you pick now is going to be your life?
Yeah, of course. The careers officers always appear to be a kind of redundant position in any school. What do you want to be? A Celtic player? As everybody would say that. You know? Uh-huh. Okay, then, banana straightener, get out.
But ironically, that was your favourite job. So
I was asked, and I said I wanted to be an actor, and I wanted to go to Queen Margaret College particularly, and I was advised to do social work and then do something later on. And I think loads of people, I remember Sanjeev said he'd started doing medicine and then he went on to do maths as well, and then kind of ended up sort of going a long way round to get into where he is now. And I think particularly at school, if you're bright, it seems like a waste to want to be an actor. Well, go and do a degree in something and then see where you go after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a few hires, but I wasn't that bright and I didn't have that many options. And I think when you know what you want to do, it makes all the difference. But for my own boys, Ian likes like art and that kind of thing, and he's actually going to do a course in theatre production. So he's kind of going down the same road as us, but backstage.
Yeah.
But the wee Ian, he hates writing. So he's picked things like PE, drama, art, cookery, you know, like he likes home ec, he's going to do woodwork and things, and hopefully do a few hires next year. But I'm not going to push him into doing hires for the sake of ticking a box to go to uni. I'd rather he just did something that he enjoyed and then finds his own path.
No,
it's really hard. There is loads of pressure.
Mark, were you set on acting, or what did you?
I remember saying to the careers officer, "Nice woman enough. that she asked me, and I said I wanted to be an actor. And then she just started talking as if I never said that. But eventually I got the job as an apprentice joiner, and I did that. I quite liked Wood. Paul said he built the concert hall. Well, if you're ever in Clydebank and you look at the roof that's on the sub post office outside Yep. Well, I watched people do that. I never took any part in it. The only time I got a chance to put my nail belt on with my hammer and my hard hat is when I went for people's lunch because I fancied the lassie and the butcher. I used to walk past as if I was or something.
Well, I've got some careers advice in reverse. I was at the beginning of my journey to becoming an actor at drama school. And the movement teacher in the drama school, he said to me, there's always time for you to become a plumber, you know.
Oh, nice.
And get this, Dave, about 3 or 4 years after I left drama school, he showed up in Taggart and he got killed in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Apparently, when I was I'd left school for about a year, they were in the staff room and the headmaster was in. Very funny guy, but he went, anyone know what David Goodall's up to now? And someone said, I think he's doing Arabic and philosophy at university. There's a boy that'll die selling guns in the Lebanon.
I don't know what I was thinking about. And Paul, you and I, we went to London to audition for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
We went down and we were interviewed for the part of like the robbers or something. They had the investors. He was about 75, jet black hair. We started doing the scene. And I've caught his eye, the old guy, and he's scrunched up his face and he's looking at us. This is the beginning, and he's looking at the director and he's looking at us again. Although, here we go. And we finished the scene. And the guy went, great, that was really good. Bradley, you both sound like R. Willie. R. Willie. You both sound like R. Willie.
That's a forerunner to R. Kelly.
Someone's knocking on the door. Someone we've been waiting for. We haven't got a bell, so it's really just as well that I'm knocking on the door.
It's Gavin Mitchell, everybody!
Gavin Mitchell! Hey.
Excellent. Hello, you rapscallions. Who the devil are yous?
Good mate. How are you getting on, Gav? All right?
I'm no bad. No bad. Nothing a bullet wouldn't fix.
How do you doing, Gavin? You've got, Gav?
Tiger. Frames available elsewhere, just your off-the-shelf reading specs. Because I'm at that age now, Jane, where I just keep forgetting where I've left my specs, you know.
Gavin, sometimes you... David Goodall does this as well. You're the only two people I know who would wear glasses on a string.
When Winston's specs, I would have them on my head and would always forget, and I could never find them. And it was just... do you remember one time? It was during lunch. Do you remember this? And
I remember it well. You accused me of it.
I lost my glasses during lunch and then I had to go to the wardrobe and say, look, sorry, I've lost my glasses. And they were freaking out about it. And what had happened was I'd gone to the toilet, everybody.
Oh, dear.
It turned out that my specs were in the leg of Winston's trousers. And
nice.
Right at the very last minute, I felt, what's that at the bottom of my leg? And it was my specs, so all was well in the end.
But you kept saying to me, Jenny, please, will you take them?
What's been happening with you?
Same as everybody else, mate. Just I've taken the dug out, reading, painting. I've watched.
I have neither read nor painted during lockdown.
You know, I just forget
to paint
again, which is nice.
Owing to the vagaries of broadband, solar flares, and using a built-in microphone, it sounds like Gavin's in a port-a-loo. After consultation with his legal team, Gavin agreed to use a separate microphone.
Any better?
Yeah, that's
much better.
Gavin Mitchell, everybody.
Gavin Mitchell, everybody. Again, I went for a shite and I lost my spec. So, how has lockdown been for you, Gav? What's happening?
All right, it's been fine, really. Well, it started thing because you kind of think we're built for it, don't you? The periods of unemployment and all that. So, I quite relished it at first. It was just a chance to catch up with stuff. Loads of books and Netflix and all that kind of thing, like everybody else. And then started getting a bit fed up. And then where I live, I started turning into a right kind of cut and twitcher, grumpy neighbour. You know, look at them, they've been in the garden all day, they're doing, they're bevying. And who's that on their bike? They don't come through here. They're nowhere near. Am I going to get an eBay and buy an air rifle? Start to go down the old Charles Bronson Death Wish vigilante road for a bit. Look at that queue outside that pizza shop. Does anybody need a coffee that bad?
You just ended up painting all these things.
Like everything red, Coxie. Everything red. Red. I was getting a wee bit fed up, but thankfully things changed a wee bit about a week ago, so I could go and see a girlfriend who I hadn't seen for like 15 weeks or whatever. So that was a relief.
Oh, oh hello.
Although I did the classic of being able to go into a garden at last with the sunshine being out, wearing a vest. And I had a Glasgow tan. Jane, you look as if you're in hospital.
I'll tell you, the first week we did it, I had to hide under pillows downstairs, right, in the kitchen, and it was still all echoey. So the only place it sounded quite good,
Jane,
was in my bedroom.
Tell everybody what actually you said. You said I was good in the bedroom.
Yeah, Paul's good in the bedroom.
See, Paul's in his bedroom too, but he's sitting at a table. He looks quite, you know, he looks quite professional. I'm just lying in my bed, in my boudoir. I know it's ridiculous, Gavin. But I've got my rainbow jumper on. Look, Gavin.
I know, very Mork and Mindy, Jane.
I know. Oh, I just bought it because it was a wee rainbow. Then everybody said, is it supporting LGBT? And I said, well, I do support LGBT, but I just bought it because it was a rainbow. And now whenever I go out, folks say, is that you supporting the health service? Well, I do support the health service, but I just like my rainbow jumper.
The reason that this week's topic was about the career path was because Gavin's had such a widely varied and interesting
it's old
career. Gavin's old.
And Gavin, can I also say this, that where we're going to go when we're doing the tour, one of the places is Motherwell, and we picked Motherwell this week because of you, because I said that time I was taking you So Motherwell was the closest place to your stories of growing up. Where were you brought up? Is it Coatbridge?
I'm for Springburn originally, but then
Gavin.
I come from Springburn, but I went to school in Coatbridge and I lived in Glenboy and I lived in Airdrie.
So Gavin, when you were growing up in all these places, what did you do before you did the acting?
The acting? Oh God, what did I do? Lots of different things. I lived in Berlin for a while where I was a gardener and landscape gardener by day, and I was a DJ in a French gay club by night.
The South Lanarkshire.
So I used to do that, and I just kind of skiving about. Lots of things, worked in music a wee bit, all sorts. But art was always my favourite thing. So I bumped into my pal on the tube one night, and I had a litre of Scrumpy, and he was on his way to the Citizens to do an all-nighter painting the panto set. And he said, here, do you do a bit of painting? Why don't you just bring that way? One thing led to another with that, and I used to do casual work. And then my mate Ian get in to do some carpentry, and they asked him to be an extra, and he had no aspirations to be on the stage, and he said to me, and I was like, that was the start. It became an extra to sits for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, something like that. So I kind of learned on the job a wee bit, and then went for there to Bobby Carlyle's theatre company, Rain Dog. I remember walking in the first day and somebody was talking about the big end of their motor being gone and football and all that, and it was actors. I thought, all right, so you can actually speak in your own accent and be yourself, and there's other ways to do this. So yeah, I just bumbled around to there on in, really.
What happened with Still Game? How did you get the gig then?
That's how I met Jane as well. We did a series called Pulp Video. Greg and I did a couple old men and these sketches, and it just was great, great fun. They were just great characters.
No, that's right. That's how it came about. And then you came in as Bobby the barman, and I guess the rest is, as they say, history, right?
I don't know if it was a wind-up or no. I had to audition for Still Game. So I had to sit in front of Ford and Greg and Michael, and it's got to be right, you've got to get this character right, and all the rest of it. And then I found out that I don't think anybody else was up for it, but they just made me go through it, the buggers. So I've been listening every week, and I noticed last week there was no, I hope I'm no upsetting anybody, but there was no mention of Basil.
Thank
you, Gavin Mitchell, everybody.
Can you remember an instance where we did a job together that wasn't Still Game?
Oh God, aye.
Do tell, Gavin, do tell.
That was an amazing job. A movie by Bill Forsyth called Being Human, which starred the one and only late, great Robin Williams. We were kind of employed as sort of glorified extras. Still to this day, one of the greatest jobs I've ever done. Just the most amazing time. Just a rare tear, wasn't it?
We were there for about a fortnight. Would that be right?
Aye.
And we were playing these cavemen. We were on the beach and we were between shots. They were changing the lights or whatever. I swear to God, I witnessed Gavin Mitchell and Robin Williams both doing Mick Jagger to each other at the same time. It was absolutely hilarious. And
well, he was doing Keith, I think. You guys were great. You kind of would egg me on to do voices with him and we'd do voices. He taught me how to do Gregory Peck and I was teaching him to do Connery and stuff. But the funny thing was, we're standing in this wood in the middle of the night and Robin Williams started doing Rolf Harris to me. Which was bizarre. He would say things like he was doing Keith Richards and going, do you remember that time where we, you know, we got a sort of trout and we went fishing? And I kept just going, no. And Smith goes, no, I don't. But that time I went, oh, yeah. It was like, brown trout, how come you're playing so good? Yeah. Have you ever been to Keith's? What? You know, and he starts telling me how it's mad that Keith phones you at 3 a.m. and all that and does your head in. I'm like, nice. He doesn't do that with me, funnily enough.
What happened was he had like, you come to my house, so we all went up there and he got us dinner and all that, and then the next night he came to our hotel, which was, you know, spitting sawdust really, and we played, I remember playing doubles with him and his wife Marsha. At the end of the shoot, right, everybody was given this tiny wee business card. It was about the size of an After Eight, right?
Aye, aye.
And on the back, handwritten, was this number. And we were told, if you're ever in San Francisco, phone this number and I'll sort you out, right? Gavin, it's over to you.
I phoned the number. I thought, bugger it. And the terrible thing was I blew him out about five times. We made about five different arrangements and for various reasons I couldn't make it. And then we arranged one day, I think it was the Super Bowl as it happened to be, and it was Green Bay Packers, which was Marsha's team, were in the final. Come in, watch the Super Bowl and all that and stay for dinner and everything. It was lovely, you know, I mean, and remember wee Zelda, who was just a tiny tot at that point, was youngest, and Zelda said, you know, come up and let me show you my hamster. I got up to a room and it's like any kid's room, a great room, but then you see cells from original cells to Aladdin and there's a picture on the wall and it's written in crayon, her wee letter to the president and a reply for Clinton at the time and all that. Wow. That's just the sort of thing you do when you're away, isn't it? But it was great. I visited him a few times and when he came to Glasgow once, he asked me up with Billy Connolly's Steve Martin and Eric Idle and all these people and wow. Would I like to come up and all that? But I said no.
Did I was you just, actually, Gav? Why?
Yeah, I was just too intimidated. I just thought, I was just too in awe and thought it'd be too much to go in with these people. I mean, having conversations with them about, have you ever been to Keith's? And, you know, I'd be like, if you went to a Greg's, it would be your favourite thing.
You'd be like, to them, that's great about Keith's. Now, but you ever lost your glasses and you can't find them?
Where's me Bob? He's awful quiet.
Bobby's a dog, everybody.
Bob, a dog, which I should explain. He's a wee rescue dog from Spain who somebody found for me and showed me a picture. I was like, you know, you've got to see if you connect with the dog and all that. And then I saw his name and he was originally called Bobby. So I was like, no, I'm no having a dog called Bobby. So went to meet him and we clicked and took him out a couple of times. And then I said I was going to take him. The woman said, oh, you're going to adopt him. That's smashing. Can I tell you something now? See, I believe things happen for a reason, son. The last four dogs that I rescued from Spain, I called them Jack, Victor, Isa, and Bobby. And we couldn't think of a better name for them, so we just shortened it to Bob. Bob the dog.
Bill has got a question. It's specifically for you, Gavin. I would love to know how people react to seeing him. Do they think they can slag him off and do they ever take it too far?
Most people, that's what they do. So I normally get the 2 pints prick and I just get used to it. I mean, people, that has been a nice break in lockdown, to be honest, because I get it virtually every single day. But most of the time I don't mind. I've just get used to it. The only problem is that when people say 2 pints prick or should you know be on the other side of the bar, they don't understand why I don't crease up laughing. like it's the first time I've ever heard it, and that it's hilarious, and I've been hearing it for 20 years.
Anyone who's listening who isn't a viewer of Still Game, Gavin's character, Bobby, is perennially being insulted by Jack and Victor, and I suppose everybody else, really.
Not me so much.
We've got Julie here. Now, hold on, Paul. Julie is from Canada.
G'day, oh. Julie.
There we are. So, Gavin, were you finally glad to give up Bobby's mullet?
Oh, no, especially nowadays as I'm follically challenged myself and going grey. Because Bobby's hair went a bit crazy when we came back and I got a new wig and it was these long, luscious, flowing locks. He was looking like Tarzan or something.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoyed that. I felt like I was in Charlie's Angels or Dana Timothy advert. So I do miss that as it starts to come into the winter. My bald spot starts to nip, but he's away to a guinea pig farm in Peru now in his roaming free.
He's a rescue wig. Lachlan McKenzie. Lachlan starts with this premise. Gav has a great music taste, judging by his Twitter. There we are. What gig are you most looking forward to after lockdown?
Oofed. Oh, after lockdown, I don't know. I know there's hopefully a gig happening soon out at Strathclyde Country Park. Colonel Mustard of Dijon 5 are doing a kind of drive-in gig. That might be nice. That might be quite good fun. But there's loads of things. There's a gig I've always wanted to go with Paul, but for one reason or another, we've not been able to make it. Who are meant to be playing the Blockheads from Ian Dury and the Blockheads are meant to be playing nearby, and I've never ever seen them. But I don't know, it'd just be nice to go to a gig again just to see some live music. It'll be fantastic.
This is Dav Owens, and judging by the flag on Dav's Twitter feed and Dav's name, I think Dav's from Wales or has connections with Wales. Of all the names you called Jack and Victor when you came into the Clansmen, do you have a favourite?
Not particularly. It's the ones that everybody loves, really, the classics. You know, I think Batman and Robin, probably.
Yeah.
And the one that was the top one when we did the live shows wasn't so much calling them a name, but it's Jack's response. You're putting on the beef, Jack. Every time I shag your wife, she makes me a sandwich.
This is a regular questioner, Scott Davidson. And Scott, he might not be 13 anymore, but he was 13 when he first tweeted us. So Scott's got another question. Gavin, between the Still Game episodes and live shows at the Hydro, what was your favourite scene and why?
Oof. That's a hard one. Telly-wise, probably the second last episode was really great fun for me because I got to meet, got to meet Majur and Amy McDonald and all that, and that was really good fun.
And you did your ninja stuff as well. You were doing your action.
Indeed, thank you, sir. You talked me through all that and the bluebells and everything. So that was a really nice episode for me, and I really enjoyed that. Live-wise. Gosh, there was lots of great moments live, but I must admit I'll never ever forget the very first night because I opened the show on my own, and that was a huge laxative. And just standing waiting, you know, and it was like going to your death. I watched the rest of the cast all cuddling each other and all nervous and dead excited, and then I was taken away for everybody and led up the stairs. It was like going to be hung. And, you know, the place like a football pitch when you walk up to the stage and just standing at the Clansmen. And then the music started and it was pounding. You could just hear the roar of the crowd and the curtain moving and thought, oh, Jesus. And then this explosion, and there they were, just screaming and roaring. And, and I thought, God, there's nobody to dig me out of this. Then go wrong. But yeah, that will always stick in my mind. That was extraordinary, very first time.
Thank you, Scott, for that. Wee question for everybody then. Okay, Corin, it's not Corinne, I think it's Corin, wants to know, where is the weirdest place you've been recognised?
Apart from toilets. Men in toilets with their kids is quite odd. Do we get a selfie?
When I was going to the sexual health clinic in Sucky Hall Street. Now, I have to say, it was my doctor referred me, and it was for, you know, a very kind of normal thing. It wasn't a sexual health problem. So I went into this clinic. The Janny recognised me outside. took a selfie, hello there, hello, and I went. So I went in, the clinic was about to close. She said to me, I would get myself up on the bed, scants off, she would just be a minute. That'd be lovely, I said. I'm lying there, I hear a knock on the door, and somebody said, Jane, and I said, yes, just come through. There was the Johnny. The doctor, legs akimbo, up in stirrups, scants off the lot. It was the end of the clinic. The doctor was called Jane, and that was him coming in just to check he could lock up.
Willow wants to know, what's your favourite role you've ever portrayed as an actor?
Casablanca, maybe for you, Gav.
Oh,
no?
God, aye.
Brilliant.
Casa's been good to me. Started as a wee bit of a drunken joke and then turned into a show, and then it's went on and for 10 years now. Took us all over the world.
I remember doing Waiting for Godot. Myself and the late, great Andrew Delmire did Vladimir and Estragon. That was the hardest thing, I think, probably, that I've done on stage.
Which were you?
Vladimir. And it got nominated for all awards and all that, and everybody loved it. And it was great fun being in it as well, to be honest with you. So that would be mine, I would say.
Jean McCarry.
I'm not sure. Even when I play a small part or a wee tiny thing, I always miss that character at the end of the... Does everybody feel that way at the end of the show?
Yeah.
You kind of miss them. You miss being in their shoes. You miss pretending to be somebody else.
I've done lots of things that I quite like doing, experiences-wise. I always quite like the experience of doing things. And
yeah,
doing Outlander was a good experience because it felt as if it was the first Hollywood thing. Yous have talked about a Hollywood thing, which was a dud. But the Hollywood thing I did was quite successful, Outlander. So I love that, just for the acts, you know, just the spectacle of it and being involved in that kind of thing.
The spectacle of being in Cumbernauld. Give yourself a break.
Oh, I was just in Cumbernauld, Paul. I think you'll find that I was in Perthshire. in Perthshire again, twice. I was in Denny, near Denny. So I all over, basically.
Well, I take it back. Denny,
basically,
I take it
all over. It was great. Sam Hewn, etc. And just striking up conversations here. Sam, you wear glasses, and then just telling us glasses-based stories again. Very, very popular.
Ever lost your glasses doing your joggy buttons?
Exactly.
Big thank you for Gavin, please.
Well done, Gavin.
Thank you, folks. Well, that is all we've got time for. As Mark likes to say, we have used up all our words. If you've enjoyed the podcast, then tell other people. Please subscribe. Follow us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is 3Down1Across. Big thank you to Gavin, who is an absolute gem.
Yes.
Paul's going to be beaming in from Ireland next week.
G'day, Ireland.
Listen in then.
Bye.
3Down1Across is an Osprey production. This episode was recorded remotely under lockdown, following one rule for you, another rule for Dominic Cummings. It was produced at Soundsmooth Facilities.